Next on our agenda is item C, trial court allocation, funding for general court operations and specific costs in 2014-15. It's an action item. I turn it first over to Judge Rubin.
Is there any public comment? Anybody want to make a public comment on item C? If so, please raise your hand or step forward. And Chief, for the record, I'm seeing no hands raised and no one stepping forward.
Except Zlatko.
Except for Zlatko is coming to give the presentation.
Thank you. Zlatko, are you doing this presentation solo?
I am not, thankfully. And Judge Earl is on her way. I do ably assisted by Colin Simpson and Stephen Chang.
Thank you. Can I inquire more specifically about what on the way means? Chief, she just texted me and said she'll be here any minute. Okay. Well, I'd like to wait to get started so the full panel is here, so we'll take a 5-minute recess, bathroom break. Thank you. Back on our business meeting on the air, item C, we previously described this. It's an action item. I invite Judge Lori Earle, co-chair of the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee, and Mr. Zlatko Theodorovich, co-chair, Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, Chief, members of the Council. We bring to you several recommendations for allocations from the Trial Court Trust Fund. Those recommendations came from a committee meeting we held on July 7th in Sacramento. With the exception of recommendation number 2, which I will discuss in a moment, all of the other recommendations were approved unanimously by those members in attendance at the July meeting. And by my count, I think we had 24 of the 30 members in attendance. The first item deals with a shortfall in the trial court trust fund. I'm supposed to follow the PowerPoint, so I'll do that. Try not to get ahead of it. As you know, the council does have statutory authority to allocate funding appropriated in the Annual Budget Act from the Trial Court Trust Fund. It's done preliminarily preliminary allocations in July with final allocations in January. I think I already said that. Sorry.
Just to give you an update on the fiscal status of the Trial Court Trust Fund, if you recall, the Council approved a budget change proposal to pursue $70 million to address projected continuing declines in Trial Court Trust Fund balances and revenues. Based on that and the potential actions that may be taken today, this would put the Trial Court Trust Fund in a negative fund balance position. The budget did include $30.9 million to address the shortfall, but there was a balance of $22.7 that was unaddressed in the budget. And to the extent that we, again, move forward with the recommendations in this report, we would put the fund balance in a negative position. So we go to recommendation one, which relates to this shortfall of $22.7 million, which Judge Earl will discuss.
Just by way of background on the reason for this shortfall and perhaps provide the basis for the committee's first recommendation, I wanted to remind you that over the past several years, when the state was in the throes of a severe fiscal crisis, the state significantly reduced general fund support for trial court operations and relied in part on revenue from court user fees as a source of trial court funding. The risk in doing so, obviously, is that if court user fees decline, so does the revenue that they generate. And in April, we brought to your attention a significant decline in these projected user fees revenues, and you approved the submission of a spring finance letter to the Department of Finance requesting an ongoing general fund augmentation to the Trial Court Trust Fund to address this projected shortfall. In his May budget revision, the governor proposed to provide up to $30.9 million in ongoing augmentation to backfill this shortfall, but he declined to provide an additional $22.7 million, reasoning that that amount represented revenues from locally based charges, which were not part of trial court's allocation from the trust fund. Further conversations clarified, and the Department of Finance acknowledges that that was incorrect, that all of the amount, including the 22.7, was based on these user fee revenues and not locally based charges. Despite that, the enacted budget failed to include an augmentation to cover this amount. So in our meeting on July 7th, we discussed this projected deficit and what actions to take to address it. It is the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee's opinion that the stability of state trial court funding should be protected despite fluctuations in user fee revenues. It appears that the Department of Finance shares this opinion, as their Chief Deputy Director testified at the June 5th Budget Conference Committee hearing that, quote, to the extent that there is uncertainty in the revenue forecast, we would commit to backfilling fees going forward, end quote. It is unclear to our committee why the Department of Finance would not commit to backfilling this year's projected shortfall, and we recommend continuing informal discussions with them regarding their commitment to stable trial court funding. If this projected $22.7 million shortfall is not backfilled, it would have to be absorbed by the trial courts as a reduction in general fund funding. The committee discussed this potential reduction and unanimously agreed and now recommend to you that it not be allocated to the trial courts at this time. Rather, that you approve a preliminary allocation, as is done every July, which includes the $22.7 in revenue, and that a formal request, by way of a deficiency request, be submitted to the Department of Finance after September 30th to backfill the revenue loss. If the deficiency request is not adopted by the governor, the Budget Advisory Committee would be prepared to make a recommendation to you at the October Judicial Council meeting on how the shortfall should be allocated among the trial courts. So to that extent, if you look at the recommendation that we make, recommendation number one, 1C, I would ask to slightly modify to include language that our committee provide the council with that recommendation at the October Judicial Council meeting. We also recognize that trial courts need some idea of what their share of the reduction would be if backfilling of this revenue shortfall is not forthcoming. So we included on attachment D what we consider the most viable options for allocating the reduction if we have to do so. However, we have not thoroughly vetted or arrived at a recommendation on either one of them at this time, and we would do so in time again for the October meeting. Scenario one, which appears on Appendix D, page 21 of your materials. Scenario 1 assigns each court a share of the $22.7 million shortfall based on their pro rata share of the 2014-15 base allocation. Scenario 2 is very similar, and if you look at the end results of those, you'll see how similar they are. But the calculation for Scenario 2, each court's non-sheriff security costs are first removed from the base allocation before the pro rata share is calculated. This protects those courts like Shasta, Trinity, Butte, and any other courts that use marshals or other court employees for their security needs from having funding for those costs included when calculating the base. Scenario 2, just for your edification, is how the 2% statewide reserve is allocated. As you can see in comparison, the results are very similar, but they serve to allow the trial courts to see what their share of the reduction would be under either of these options. The reasons for our recommendation are this. This shortfall, we believe, is rightfully a problem that the state needs to take responsibility for. While the projection is $22.7 million, that shortfall has not yet materialized, and we'll have more current projections in October. Additionally, it is unclear whether, if the state is prepared to backfill this $22.7 million, but is committed to backfilling fee-based revenue declines going forward, does that include the $22.7 in future years, or would the trial courts have to absorb this as an ongoing reduction? Lastly, while allocations made in July are preliminary allocations, which are finalized in January, we propose keeping a closer eye on this one and not waiting until January, but readdressing this issue in October so that trial courts have some level of budget assurance. This might be a time to take a break, Chief, before I go on to the next item.
Thank you, Judge.
Questions or comments?
Senator Evan.
Thank you. Welcome, Chief Justice. I appreciate the opportunity to comment on this. I think it was a well-done presentation, and I want to say, personally, I support this recommendation, and I wanted to maybe just weigh in a little bit from the perspective of the Capitol. You have a letter from Assemblymember Richard Bloom, who is the chair of the Assembly Budget Subcommittee 3, which has jurisdiction over funding for the courts, and his third paragraph, I think, is in a nutshell what I would say to you, and I would like to kind of elaborate a little bit on what he says. He makes a couple of points. One is that proposals that would knowingly result in deficit spending are not fiscally prudent, and secondly, that he fears that doing so might send a message that could jeopardize improving relationships between the branch, the judicial branch, and the legislative and the executive branch. And I want to just give a little perspective on how we got here. For at least the last 15 years, state general fund support for almost every service in the state has been dwindling. And I can look at other I can look at state agencies such as parks, other services such as schools, where the general fund support has been steadily going down, 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 to the point where less than 50% of those operations are provided by the state general fund. And the same thing has been happening to courts. And since 2008, state general fund support for courts has dropped by over 50%. So what's happening in all of our state services is each agency is being asked to look at other sources of funding. And you can argue with whether that's a good policy or a bad. Personally, I think it's a bad policy, but nonetheless, that's where we are. When that policy gets applied to courts, you create an inherent conflict, right? Because the last thing we want courts to do is take a look at their bottom line and say, well, we need to increase the fines that we assess, or we need to increase the fees, thereby cutting off access by the public to our courts. So philosophically, I don't agree with where we've headed, and I think we're coming to the end of that. But what I want to mention is the two points made by Assemblymember Bloom. First of all, the Judicial Council cannot pick a fight with the Department of Finance. It is not winnable. And I don't think that's where the Judicial Council is headed, nor do we want to go there. They hold all the cards, obviously. They hold all the dollars, and we need to work cooperatively with them. I can't explain why this one thing got overlooked. What I can explain is that this year in the Capitol, I saw a sea change in the attitude towards the judicial branch. Now, I've been a practicing trial lawyer for 32 years. I've been in the state legislature for 10. When I first came in the state legislature in 2004, I was on the budget committee. I was appalled to see Chief Justice Ron George at that time walking hat in hand from one legislative office to another begging for funds. And what was even more appalling was that the people in the legislature didn't seem to have a real understanding of what the courts did or why the courts might need funding from the state and why the courts had to be seen as an independent branch of the from the executive and the legislature. It was pretty appalling. Over the last few years, particularly because of efforts of members of the Judicial Council, the Chief Justice, myself, and a small handful of other legislators, and trial courts and appellate court judges from around the state, there's been an enormous amount of education and talking, and really, I can say now, this year for the first time, the legislature gets it. They now understand what the problem is and why it's a problem and the importance of funding to the judicial branch. So it's a long way of getting to my point, which is don't upset the apple cart at this point. There's been a lot of goodwill built up. There's been a lot of new education and understanding that's happened, and we need to keep that moving forward. So what I would suggest on this, if the Chief Justice hasn't already done this, that conversations be held with the legislative leaders, and right now we have a new Assembly President, Tony Atkins, Speaker, excuse me, and we have an incoming pro tem in the Senate, Kevin DeLeon, and we also have Daryl Steinberg. So those legislative leaders should be engaged in the conversation on this particular issue. And the legislature will go out of session November 30th. So if this legislature needs to take any action, it needs to be done before then. And we actually go out of Sacramento at the end of September. So if possible, we could maybe even try to get something done by the end of September. But I think this is, it's a small amount of money as far as the overall state budget is concerned, but it's a huge issue for the trial courts. But whatever happens, we need to make sure that we keep that goodwill and keep working cooperatively with the Department of Finance. That's my 2 cents.
Thank you, Senator Evans.
Thank you, Chief. A question to Judge Jarre. Have there been communications with the Department of Finance, in particular its director, Michael Cohen, about the proposed action here today, specifically, i.e., a deficit budget?
I've had conversations about the issue with Michael Cohen directly, but not since the Budget Advisory Committee met, deliberated, and arrived at its proposal. So I've had no communication with him or his office since that came to pass.
Has Mr. Cohen or anybody from DOF expressed to the branch its stance on the issue or its concern regarding deficit spending by this branch?
I have spoken with Michael Cohen personally on this matter. And I don't know when the Budget Advisory Committee came to its conclusion or its vote, but like always, prior to the budget being built, during the building of the budget, while the legislature and the Big Three are convened around the table, I have had personal conversations with Michael Cohen in the evenings after all is said and done, as well as I know the outreach done by Judge Jarre, by Kurt Soderlund, by Jody, to the administration, by Kurt Child, by all of you in your meetings with Diane Cummins and Nancy McFadden. The same with leadership across the board, including impending leadership like Kevin DeLeon and Tony Atkins in dinners about the budget. But in this particular issue, yes. I can't say vis-a-vis when the unanimous decision was made by the Budget Advisory Committee. And I remind you that Michael Cohen comes here to present on the budget in August, right, and that this issue has been discussed. Deficit spending has been discussed, not different from what Senator Evans has said here today.
Okay, and just to clarify, so I'm clear on it, since I'm a simple mind, I have to ask simple questions, and so forgive me. But the sentiment from Mr. Cohen and or the DOF is that they are not in favor of the branch engaging or adopting a negative budget or a deficit budget. Is that correct?
I can't speak to what their personal or professional view was, but it was the reaction was one of amazement.
Okay. Thank you.
Justice Baxter.
Yeah, sometimes a recommendation with the best of intentions can have unintended consequences. And I suspect that in this case, that would be true. I think the simplest way to state it is, how do you allocate something you don't have? And being unable to allocate something you don't have doesn't mean that you can't, with all the force available, advocate that the Department of Finance fix the problem that they created. In a sense, if we were to proceed as recommended, the problem that the Department of Finance currently has will become our problem. And we will be telegraphing to the trial courts that this money is available. And then what do we do? So I do think that we proceed carefully. I don't think we should provoke our sister branches of government. We know what the governor's view is in terms of rainy day funds, living within our means. So with that, I would strongly recommend that we not proceed in that fashion.
Justice Hull and Senator Evans.
Thank you, Chief. Maybe this question is best for Judge Earl. I guess I'm a little bit, I'm a little bit puzzled on this when you report that there will be, there has been given some consideration already by the trial courts as to the position that they would be in if this $22.7 million revenue shortfall does not appear. And I'm having trouble understanding why we would, if there is time for them to prepare for that, and it's my understanding that some of them already have prepared for that, I'm having a little trouble understanding why we would want to allocate this money that we don't have, and I'm having trouble understanding why the wiser course, especially in light of the potential political ramifications, wouldn't be to allocate and have the trial court's budget without money that they don't have, and then come back in October. If we're fortunate enough to get the money back, then it can be allocated then. But if we're not, then we can see the future clearly enough from here as far as prudent budgeting goes. And I have a little trouble understanding why we would want to do this way in the first place.
Justice Hull, the consensus of the committee was that by doing that, we would solve a problem that's not ours, and that it should be solved by the Department of Finance, and they should not be let off the hook on that.
Senator Evans, then Judge McCabe, then Judge Elias, then Frank McGuire, please remember your order.
I apologize. I think I was a little unclear in my beginning of my statement. I do not support deficit budgeting. Hopefully my comments made that clear. And I also misspoke as far as when the legislature leaves Sacramento. It leaves at the end of August, not the end of September. So if the legislature is going to be involved in helping to solve the problem, it would have to be before the end of August.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. I more comments than questions this time. Number one, the proposed action doesn't solve a problem that was created by somebody else. It's a fiction. Who are we kidding? I mean, it still exists. We're giving X amount. That's how much you spend. And we have a budget that is proposing to spend Y. And I'm deeply concerned about not only the consistent statements that were made by Senator Evans, Assemblymember Bloom, the sentiments from DOF, is they want us to act prudently, fiscally responsible, and that they consider a deficit spending to be contrary to that. So I'm slow, but I'm not that slow. I get the picture, and I think that this is going to create political fallout and undo what I think we've worked extremely hard over the last several years to build, which is a relationship with our sister branches. This is ill-advised. We can still propose a balanced spending budget and ask for a BCP, right? I mean, they're not mutually exclusive. You can still do that, and I recommend we continue to do that. But the writing is on the wall, and they want and are watching and listening to what we do, and I think we should act appropriately. And in this case, deficit plan, I don't think meets the mark. I would recommend this council reject this.
Judge Elias?
Mine was just really a question to Judge Earle. Looking at the revenue shortfall options that you talked about, are these, it's my understanding these are one-year solutions. Is that this is not ongoing and doesn't go into the base of the parties, of all the courts, that was your recommendation? Am I correct?
Well, we didn't get that far because we did have the question of whether or not this is an ongoing reduction or it's just for the current year. We could assume that it's for the current year and readdress it next year.
I'm just trying to understand what your recommendation is, your scenario one, or that is, whether these are 1 year or whether this is an ongoing allocation plan.
Zlatko, if you'd already share. Judge Elias, given the circumstance and the fact that we, as Judge Earle said, we didn't dive deeply into the concept of how to evaluate the different options for reductions, One would want to assume that these are only 1 year, given the fluctuation of the revenues, our continued advocacy for branch reinvestment. And so I think if we were to come to if we would have had a discussion and come to a concrete conclusion, we would say it would be a 1 year, given our continued advocacy for restoration of the overall revenues to the Trial Court Trust Fund.
Frank McGuire, then Judge Rubin, then Mary Beth Todd.
Hi, my name is Frank McGuire. I'm the executive officer of the California Supreme Court and wanted to offer the perspective of a court executive officer on the recommendation. In my view, as shared by others, the recommendation runs contrary to all principles of sound fiscal management by allocating and spending money we don't have. As an appellate court clerk administrator, I am particularly troubled by the fact that such funding would inure to the detriment not just of the trial courts, but to the entire branch, including both the Supreme Court and the six district courts of appeal. Finally, like Senator Evans, Assembly Bloom, and other council members, I'm gravely concerned that in one fell swoop, the council, were it to approve this recommendation, would be jeopardizing the improved relationships between the executive, legislative, and judicial branches that we have worked so hard to achieve over the past several years. In short, the recommendation puts the perennial cart before the horse. If there's a deficiency in trial court funding, as Senator Evans suggests, we should go in and obtain funding to address the deficiency, and then, and only then, should the council allocate the funding.
Thank you, Frank. Judge Rubin, then Mary Beth Todd, then Jim Fox.
This is obviously a very difficult and painful subject that we're discussing. I want to first thank Judge Earl and her committee for struggling with this and wrestling this demon and making a very thoughtful recommendation. My sense is, after reading Assemblymember Bloom's letter, and I would, again, I think Senator Evans directing us to the third paragraph, especially the last sentence, which says, "Moreover, I am concerned that doing so, that is, recommending deficit spending, would send a message that could jeopardize the improving relationship between the branches and risk future judicial investment," is that delicate language that is sometimes used in Sacramento is actually telegraphing something more significant. I think that Judge Evans, I've elevated you. Senator Evans's comments and Judge Baxter's comments that this is would have unintended consequences that would hurt us in the long run, just when we're starting to make headway for the reasons that have been stated, and I also think that Judge McKay has made some really important points. I would move that in terms of the allocation that we would adopt not the recommendation but in fact scenario 2 outlined in Appendix D, which while not understand what was recommended by the committee would at least I think of the two that I'm looking at be the most fair. That would be my motion. And then, of course, I'd also, as part of the motion, would like to see us come back relatively quickly so that we could have the trial courts start assessing for us the actual damage. And we know there'll be, I'm coming from a court that I know will be damaged by this, but we think it's statewide and in the long haul, and have the courts report back to us so we can to put in a request for deficiency spending and maintain our relationship with Department of Finance. So that would be my motion.
Point of order. I'm really in.
All right. Well, first of all, I would move that we adopt scenario 2 in Appendix D. That is to say that in terms of the allocation, we not allocate so that we wind up with a $22.7 million shortfall.
Judge Rubin, can I say something?
Yeah, okay, sure, I'll recognize you, Justice Miller.
Sounds fishy.
Page
22 of 58.
I think what the motion that David is making is that the preliminary allocation be based on scenario 2, and that the deficiency request and the evaluation of the fees and fines be returned to the council at its October meeting, so the council can make a decision at that time as to whether we continue with that preliminary allocation, or if there is money from the deficiency request or new fees and fines, then we would ask the trial court budget advisory committee to reevaluate that amount and come up with options for the rest of the year. Can I add that to your motion, David?
Sure.
If that, Chief, if that is Judge Rubin's motion, apparently it is, I'd second that.
May I clarify one thing?
Yes.
In order to do that, Judge Rubin, if you look at recommendation number one, under 1A, the base allocation of $1.557 million would have to be reduced by 22.7, which means it would be $1.535.
Correct.
And
right, that was assumed.
Right, I assume that's what you meant in scenario two, that would all be kind of all factored in.
And 1D would be to adopt scenario two rather than review preliminary options. Correct?
Correct.
So first, let me return to the question posed by Judge Rosenberg on the clarification of the motion. Judge Rosenberg?
It's getting clearer now. As you look at the actual language of the recommendation, which you find at page 2 of the report, it relates to recommendation number 1, A through D, and you would modify under Judge Rubin's motion the amount in 1A, and you would also modify 1D. To Judge Earl to come back to council in 1D?
I understood to approve scenario 2 was Judge Rubin's motion.
Right.
You specifically have to refer to scenario 2.
In Appendix D, correct.
Which can be found in Appendix D. Those would be the only changes to recommendation 1A through D.
I don't think 1C would be applicable anymore.
Right. C would be out as well.
So, correct.
And Judge Jarr, and I'm taking notes, so I'll read it later when we come to all the end. Judge Jarr, you have an amendment to 1A before, but we're still, people are speaking on this issue, so we're not going to vote immediately.
Yeah, it's simply a point of clarification. In following on Judge Rosenberg's editing proposals, I believe in paragraph 1A, in order to give force to it, at line 4, the word not should appear between the words will and be.
So
because
before,
I'm sorry.
Oh, okay, that's important.
So before I move on, ask Mary Beth Todd to comment and some others who have raised their hands. So the recommendation is item 1 remains the same, but item 1A is changed. The $1.557 billion now reads $1.535 billion. Under third line down under A, after the word B should be inserted not. Will
fourth
not
line.
Be. I'm sorry, will
that's
not be.
That's the fourth line down.
Thank you. 1, 2, thank you. B remains the same. C is deleted in its entirety. D is amended to read the council should adopt scenario number 2 in Appendix D.
That was precisely Rubin's motion. I don't know what all the problem is here.
Okay, so it's been seconded by Justice Hull, but there's further discussion on the matter, and I call in this order then Mary Beth Todd, Jim Fox, Judge O'Malley, and Judge Elias.
I'll withdraw my request to comment. I think it would be more confusing than clarifying at this point. We're in a good spot right here.
Okay.
I don't want to confuse anybody with where we are.
Thank you. And I just saw Judge Walsh and Commissioner Alexander. So next, Jim Fox.
Yeah, very briefly, obviously we are not like the federal government, which prints money but still engages in deficit spending. And I agree wholeheartedly with Justice Baxter's comments. We cannot nor should we attempt to allocate resources we don't have. So I'm supportive of the motion.
Thank you, Fox. Judge O'Malley.
It was my understanding from the committee's recommendation that both Scenario 1 and Scenario 2 had not been completely vetted by the committee, and yet we're making the decision before that committee really having an opportunity. And that committee is made up of 15 presiding judges and 15 CEOs from all over the state. And so I think it's really only fair before this body, who's really not had an opportunity to know the ramifications, really, to each court, other than just a chart that we have, as to which is best, scenario one or scenario two, that if the this body does not want to adopt recommendation one, that it ask the committee to decide scenario one or two and what's best and to come back with a recommendation with regard to that. I mean, I'm under the understanding that there still needed to be much discussion with regard to scenario one and scenario two with regard to the committee, yet here we are ready to pounce on one of those scenarios. So I'd ask us just to take a step back for a moment. If you don't want to accept scenario one, which I'm hearing from a lot of council members, then we should be prudent and cautious, as we always are, and send it back to the committee, who then given them a choice. You've got one or two, which is it going to be, or a modification of those, but not scenario or not recommendation one. And with regard to recommendation one, you know, I feel for those PJs and CEOs. You know, they have been cut and cut and cut. And I don't think anybody wants to pick a fight with anybody. I just think that they just don't want to be yet hit again with another $22 million cut. And so it's not a matter of, you know, picking a fight. I just think at this point they're beaten down pretty darn good. And so it's just a matter of hoping that a wrong can be righted for the right reason. Not that we're, and again, I'm not quite sure how it plays to the legislature. We're adoring and so grateful that the legislature now understands us. And by taking this position, it's not in any way insulting anybody of the legislature. They finally, you know, realize the importance of the courts and the wonderful people that we serve who need our services on a daily basis. So it's not in any way sending a message of disrespect or anything like that at all. And it's, again, just hoping that a wrong can be righted.
Thank you, Judge O'Malley. Judge Elias, and then Judge Walsh, and then Commissioner Alexander.
Mine was whether you'd accept an amendment to make it clear that this is a one-year plan.
It's ongoing.
Mm-hmm. That was just you.
That's to you.
Your motion.
No.
It's Ruben's motion.
Oh, I thought it was David's motion.
Yes.
That's what they say it's supposed to be. I just want to know if it...
I'm fine with that.
Okay, thank you.
I'm fine with that friendly amendment. But you have to also ask the person that seconded it.
I don't know who seconded it.
That's Paul.
Oh, that's okay. You
Paul seconded.
Other David.
Yeah. Paul seconded.
And I'll continue right. The second with that.
Thank amendment. You. And then I have one question. Judge Earle, is there a preference between... I'm sorry, I had to step out. Is there a preference between your group? Are you comfortable... Is your group comfortable with either one?
Well, I wouldn't say there's necessarily a preference. That we started with four different options, two of which we preliminarily rejected, and these are the two that we thought were the most viable. They're very close.
Thank you.
I had a question. If I could
ask. Yeah, but you're after Judge Walsh and Commissioner Alexander.
Well, I like sitting here, but
I'll still invite you to talk, Judge Rubin, because I want to follow up on Judge O'Malley's comments, and then I suggest a friendly amendment, and then I'd like to make some comments about the whole motion. Indeed, no, as to which scenario to use to absorb the $22.7 million cut, there has been no full discussion, by the Budget Advisory Committee. Indeed, we tried to discuss it at the July 7th meeting, but the numbers had changed so drastically leading up to that we said we need more time, because the issue of what to do under WAFM if you have a cut was never addressed by the WAFM subcommittee. It was on a parking lot. We were going to get to it, but because of our wonderful relationships with the legislature this year, we didn't think we were going to have to face that problem. And suddenly it came up. And we as a budget advisory committee, and we are really thorough, we are really thoughtful, have not had a chance to decide which of the four scenarios. We put the two here just to say we're showing you our work, but we've not finished our work, and we have a meeting on August 8th to do nothing but take a look at the four scenarios, and there's disagreement. Our court disagrees with some other courts, but there's going to be a statewide view that needs to be taken, because this may not be the only time we look at cuts. And I would hope that your amendment, excuse me, that your motion would allow amendment that would request that the Budget Advisory Committee continue to review the WAFA model and to recommend a method for absorbing cuts, including the $22.7 million cut, so that if one of the four scenarios, other than the one you're going forward on today, is found to be preferable, they could bring it back to this group, and the group could make that tweak. Obviously, if you're going to absorb the cut today, you've got to pick one. And here's one, but it's not been recommended, it's not been fully vetted. And I tried to ask if you'd accept an amendment to allow the Budget Advisory Committee not to change the 86, or the 64 to 86, but simply to finish its work on telling this group through a recommendation what it thinks is the best of the four scenarios.
So, Judge Walsh, before I take any amendments, can you be more specific? You're asking that this matter be referred back to the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee to choose or to determine the to allocate the reduction?
This matter, I think, is going forward, and that's
right.
I understand that.
This
but
matter
in
being
addition, not allocating the 86
okay.
million
right. okay.
and picking a scenario just because you got to have one in
so
order to complete that vote.
So your recommendation
is? Go ahead and do that if that's what this body believes. But in the meantime, ask the Budget Advisory Committee to do its work on finding a scenario methodology for absorbing cuts to WAFA, something we still haven't done. And in the course of doing that, if we find a scenario different than the one you're relying on today, to bring that back to the council. It's a tweak. It's not going to go at, you're not asking us to revisit the 86 million. I think we're going to hear loud and clear what your view is on that, but simply to allow us to continue to do our work. Otherwise, what this group, the body, will have done is adopt a scenario for how you deal with WAFA cuts before.
Okay, so I get that part, but you're asking us not to adopt scenario two?
No, I'm saying you got to adopt one, so go
okay,
ahead and adopt
it. But with a re-referral for any further refinement.
Go ahead. Right.
Well, point of order, Chief. It seems I'll defer to Judge Rosenberg, but it seems to me that that friendly amendment pretty much swallows the motion at this point.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's not my intention.
Okay.
It would be the $86 million, but have us keep doing our work.
To choose a scenario.
But this scenario would be in place in the interim, and if we come up with a better one, as is our
so
job.
You're saying scenario two would be in place unless
right. scenario 80, it would be allocating only the 64 million. Scenario two would be in place to achieve that, but we could still go about doing our work.
I see a number of heads shaking, so I'm going to defer to the chair of the Budget
question.
Advisory Committee.
Thank you. I want to just correct the record a little bit, so there isn't a misunderstanding. The Funding Methodology Subcommittee met twice by telephone to discuss this very issue. And when we first started out, we did have four options on how to allocate the 22.7. And we also talked about what if we just subtract the 22.7 from the new money, the 86 or 83.6. At the conclusion of those two meetings, we did whittle it down to the two scenarios that are in front of you. The reason, and the subcommittee did reject running a reduction through WAFA because those courts that benefit from WAFA, meaning that they get a higher percentage of the allocation under WAFA than they do the historical pro rata methodology, would also absorb a greater percentage of the reduction if it was run through WAFA. And that is counterintuitive to WAFA. And we did discuss that. And at the end of our subcommittee meeting, we presented to the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee meeting all four scenarios, but the Budget Advisory Committee also concluded that the two most viable options are scenario one and two, not running them through WAFA. If we were to subtract the 22.7 from the 83.6, there would be less new money. It would also be count. It would serve the same intention of running it through WAFM and would not be what WAFM is intended for. So I think what Judge Walsh is asking is that if you do adopt Scenario 2 as the motion calls, is that you refer it back to the Budget Advisory Committee to report to you at a future meeting, I'm here in October, on whether or not we agree with that. I'm not sure what we do if we don't, but I just want to be clear that we have talked about four scenarios, but the two that are most viable are before you today. And I think there's a clarification. Did you want to clarify that?
No,
as you
can.
Thank you, Judge Earl. So,
well, the answer is, am I accepting the friendly amendment? The answer is no.
Okay.
Well, if I could clarify, it's not an unfriendly amendment. It's not a substitute motion. If that is made as an amendment, it doesn't swallow the motion. The motion would still be viable. It just adds E, if you will, saying you're going to refer this issue back to the Budget Advisory Group to get further input on what they think about our choosing Scenario 2.
Can I ask a motion? Question?
Could be.
It's my understanding, I could be wrong about this, but Scenario 2 is based on the way the 2% reserve issue is formulated. So Scenario 2 is the same formula as the 2% reserve issue?
Correct.
Which is related to Recommendation 6.
Could you explain that a little bit more?
The 2% methodology?
Yes.
Basically, you establish what is the base funding for the trial courts. It has various adjustments that have gotten everybody to a point in time of the figures. Then we, in order to equalize, and I think this is what it describes at the bottom, is that there are some differences within those base funds, and they're primarily related to security funding. When realignment happened and security money was taken out, there were courts that had 100% of their security funding provided by the sheriffs, and therefore they had no more money left in their budget related to security. There are some courts that still had security left. So in order to equalize sort of the operational budget, we pull security out so that they are as equal as possible in their share of the total pot of dollars. And that's what we use when we do the 2% holdback to create the statewide reserve. We use that methodology because it has a little bit of WAFM rolled in, but not much because it's the beginning of the process. But it primarily reflects the historical shares. That's what the 2% methodology is, and it's been what we've adopted for the last 2 years. It'll be the third year we will be doing this. That methodology has been discussed and is what is recommended to deal with the 2%.
Thank you. So let me first get through the queue of Commissioner Alexander and then Judge Rubin.
I spoke.
Okay, good. Commissioner Alexander.
Judge O'Malley said most of what I was going to say. I had a question for Senator Evans with regards to number B or letter B. It says submit it after September 30th. Does something need to be done before August 30th? Or I'm not sure the timing. Because you were talking about August and you're talking about September.
Well, it's all about whether you want the legislature to pass a bill prior to the end of the session. If we submit it as indicated in the recommendation, then we would hope and anticipate that it would be included in the governor's budget, and the legislation would be part of a supplemental appropriations bill that tends to go in conjunction with the budget. But we would know in January if the administration was supportive of it. The idea, I think, that Senator Evans was suggesting, that if it happens earlier, then trial courts would know sooner that those funds would be there if we could get the administration to support that adjustment. Is that fair, Senator?
There's a bill called Budget Bill Junior that is passed in August that augments the Budget Bill Senior, the bigger budget bill that is passed in June. What that would require, however, is agreement from the governor and the Department of Finance to agree to backfill the deficiency this year. If that agreement isn't forthcoming, then you'd have to follow other options.
Do we need to amend this to say we would try both of those things, or do we not want to try both of those things?
I think in part the issue has been what has been communicated by the Department of Finance in terms of when they would look and revisit the topic. They would want to see additional months of revenues into the trial court trust fund to ascertain its viability. So there's Judge Jarre on that
issue. In answer to that question, and supplement to you, Judge Jarre.
So on the Chief's behalf, following on the comments that I made in response to Judge McCabe's question, but before the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee met and acted, I met with Michael Cohen in his office concerning this array of issues surrounding the 22.7, all the documentation that's been alluded to today, the comments in the Joint Legislative Budget Committee that were made, the language in the May revise, and so forth. And ultimately explained, given his clear statement that what was all there was, that we would necessarily be filing with through the appropriate process as a request for a deficiency appropriation associated with 22.7. And I asked him, what is it that you want to see among the other things that we put in so that we are sure we anticipate any questions you might have so that the document that we provide is comprehensive as far as you're concerned? And what he essentially indicated was that anything we presented would have to have new facts, something beyond that which exists now. And what he said was essentially new revenue information. The trend in terms of what has actually been received in the trial court trust fund from first paper civil filings and criminal assessments, for example. Also, he wanted to know what the closeout is on the 1% reserve to the extent that there was a surplus. And finally, I said, and of course, we would necessarily include that which is the overall general fund revenue experience for the state government in comparison with DOF's own projections for 14-15. He did not disagree. So what he made plain to me, and it wasn't by implication, it was by expression, that absent new facts, what it was what it was going to be, but that obviously they would entertain that which was submitted. And the gist of our conversation was that the close of the first quarter would have numbers that would be meaningful in that regard. I think that's where we went by the October 1st. So now I've reported to you the particulars of that. I know I've summarized this for others at different times.
Justice Hull, Judge Brandlin, and Judge Rosenberg.
Thank you, Chief. Returning to Judge Walsh's proposed friendly amendment, which has not been accepted by Judge Rubin at this point, I'm a little uncertain that you point out that neither Scenario 1 or Scenario 2 has perhaps been vetted to the comfort of the committee at this point for whatever reason. But it seems to me that we don't have to make the committee's reconsideration or new consideration of either of those part of the motion, because I would think the committee, if they want to revisit this, if they think the council, if we pass the motion, has made a mistake today, I think that the committee could come back at any time and say what you did in July isn't going to work or isn't going to work as well as it should, and here are the reasons why, and ask for some relief at that time.
Judge Brandlin, then Judge Rosenberg.
Thank you, Chief. It's just a comment. First, with regards to not seeking a deficiency request at this point and in continuing to discuss this with the Department of Finance and with our sister branch in the legislature, it's, of course, my hope that they see that the council is acting in good faith and that they will attempt to assist us with the shortfall, because certainly we're at a tactical disadvantage by, in essence, allocating the shortfall, because the rebuttal answer to that is you really didn't need that $22.7 million because you were able to figure out how to fill the hole. But I did want to address one issue with regards to Judge Walsh, and that is WAFM was a collaborative effort, and it was a painful process for every court in this state to eventually get to the point where we're at. And so I'd be very cautious about making recommendations with regards to WAFM. WAFM is something that the governor's office wanted. It's something that the legislature is looking to. It's something in the chief's blueprint. So I'd be very careful about making substantive tweaks to WAFM.
Thank you, Judge Brandlin. Judge Rosenberg.
Thank you, Chief. I think I'm detecting general consensus for Judge Rubin's motion as it's morphed through the process, And I think the only last remaining issue is the one raised by Judge O'Malley and Judge Walsh, and that is to make sure that the Budget Advisory Committee, we give them the courtesy, if nothing else, of going through their process regarding Scenario 1 and Scenario 2, which we find on Appendix D. I don't see any reason why we shouldn't adopt Scenario 2, but I would like to see an additional sentence in 1D, and maybe this is a friendly amendment that Judge Rubin will accept, that the council requests further input from the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee as to its decision going with Scenario 2. I mean, we should ask. We shouldn't just...
In October.
Yeah, exactly. You accept that as a friendly amendment?
Well, let me just clarify it. You have to be a lot more clear before I can accept that.
Yeah. I didn't understand that last sentence.
Yeah. So.
Yes.
So this is, we're up against the statute. Part of the issue about why we can't really wait. You're not saying.
I'm saying we don't wait. I'm saying we adopt your motion, but we add a sentence that we. You know, council has adopted Scenario 2. We request any further input from the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee with regard to that choosing Scenario 2.
Yeah,
it's just a courtesy kind of thing.
Was that a yes?
That's a yes. And thank you for being much more clear the second time.
And my second remains.
Okay. So I'm going to call the question on the motion, but I want to say something before I call the question, and that is, I fully understand how painful every day this is for the courts to yet again take additional cuts. I worked in the trial courts for 14 years. I know what this means to courts that have to cut in some way, shape, or form. I've known nothing but cuts every day for the last 4 years. I understand fully the passion behind the strategy in our sister branches. I can't say enough about the work that people have done to try, and all of this is an effort of public access. None of this is about more for us, and how hard the struggle has been to first even be able to explain who we are and what we do, and that we share the constituents of the governor's office and the legislature. And we've made great strides because of everyone's advocacy here, as Senator Evans has spoken to. And so this year, when the legislature came to bat for us, all of our hopes were raised about what this would mean for us. And behind closed doors, not having a seat at the table, but getting the phone call thereafter, was terribly dissatisfying about how things went down. But it's also, I have continued to meet with members even after the budget to find out and to talk about how we go forward. And what I keep hearing is, basically, in the last 5 years, all were cut, and in the last two, all are getting some, but no one is getting all. And so we have to continue in that regard. And the PJ's passion and unanimous vote to the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee here, we share the ultimate result of getting back 22.7 plus more. What we happen here today is to differ on how we get there. And that's how I view this, as a shared goal that we will continue to have, and we will pursue the deficiency letter, and we will call up and try to get the legislation before August 30th, and we will question Michael Cohen when he comes on August 29th, and we will also, I think, because this is what the legislature may want, is they're going to want to know, what have you cut as a result of not getting $22 million? How is that hurting the public when you don't get the $22 million? It may be that there are no new facts on money, but there are definitely new facts on pain. So I think that we have to recognize that we all share the ultimate goal. We have a difference in how we pursue it, but ultimately we agree and feel the passion and pain of our employees as we go forward in trying to restore a branch to provide public access. So we will act on this immediately in terms of a deficiency request and calling the leadership for a bill, even if
even if they're out of session, we know how to get a hold of them in order to start to galvanize this process and get the leaders together on how we can do this and who will carry it. And so in that regard, I'm going to ask for call the vote and, if necessary, move to a roll call vote. But I'll take that as a secondary issue. And so all in favor of the amended motion regarding only item one at this point, as amended, all in favor, please say aye.
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 All opposed, please say, all opposed?
Opposed.
One opposed. Thank you. Thank you. And at this point, we'll proceed with the recommendations remaining, Judge Earl.
Well, if that wasn't enough, we're going to talk about benefits. So recommendation number two has to do with allocation of new benefits funding for 2014-2015. This year, the governor's budget provides for an augmentation of $42.8 million specifically for benefit cost changes in 2012-13 and 2013-14. This amount falls $22.1 million short of trial court's ongoing benefit costs. The governor reasoned that the $22 million was the amount trial courts could save if they didn't cover current employee share of costs for retirement. We also discussed this at our July meeting and how to address the benefit funding shortfall. I should tell you that we bring a recommendation to you. It is for this year only. Our funding methodology subcommittee intends to meet this fall to specifically address the issue of benefits funding needs through WAFA and whether there is a way to do that. So the recommendation we bring you is for this year only. The committee discussed several options, which appear on page 7 of our report. In summary, three of the options, including factoring in to some extent a court's estimated employee retirement subsidy. And as you can imagine, there was healthy debate, as those courts that do provide a subsidy did so as a result, or do so as a result of contract negotiation, that they cannot arbitrarily change. On the other hand, not factoring in the subsidy means that those courts that do not provide any subsidy would be subject to a lower allocation. Ultimately, though, we recommend that for this year, we not account for a court's provision of a subsidy, and that we allocate the benefits funding by prorating $41 million to the trial courts based on each court's percentage of the total 2012-13 and 2013-14 benefits cost change of $63.9 million. This would result in all courts receiving approximately 67% of their total benefits funding need. The premise of this recommendation is that it would be unfair to penalize courts that do pay a portion of their employee share of retirement at such a late stage in the fiscal year when such practice was negotiated with their employees, was done before PEPRA took effect, and was not against any judicial counsel policy. But trial courts should be on notice that this may not be the position of the committee in the future. The remaining $1.2 million in new benefits funding is for court interpreter benefits and needs to be scheduled to the correct program, which is Program 4545, by the Department of Finance. Thus, staff will coordinate with Department of Finance to augment that program appropriation and does not require that you take any action. So the only action we bring to you today is the allocation of the $41 million based on our pro rata process.
Thank you, Judge Earl.
Who
wishes to be heard on this? David Yamasaki.
Thank you, Chief. I want to make a motion to approve recommendation two for a couple of reasons. This was an issue that was taken up by the Budget Advisory Committee meeting, and there was a healthy discussion. For the reasons stated by Judge Earl, specifically as it references the fact that contracts that were entered into for the 12-13 fiscal year as well as the 13-14, they're passed. And for us to suggest that for those actions, we should adopt a new methodology for funding employer benefits to me is very unfair and problematic, and I move approval of recommendation 2.
Second.
Thank you. Second by Ken So, Judge Stout, and Judge So. Any discussion on item number 2? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
Regarding recommendation number 3, which deals with 2014-15 WAFM allocation adjustments, WAFM provides for 3 different types of allocations. First, a 5-year implementation schedule, where each year a percentage of trial court's historical base funds would be allocated through WAFM. This is year 2 of WAFM, which means 15% of historical base funds are subject to reallocation using WAFM. When WAFM was adopted, it recognized a historical base fund amount of $1.44 billion, which is reflected in Appendix G of our report, column A. 15% of that $1.44 billion is $216 million, which we recommend be allocated using WAFM. Each court's share of that $216 million, by the way, in case you're following along, is depicted in Appendix G, column F. Second, WAFM provides for the allocation of new money appropriated for general trial court operations entirely pursuant to the WAFM model. Last year, the trial courts received an allocation of $60 million in new funding for general court operations. We now treat that amount separately from our historical base funds and must allocate $60 million pursuant to WAFM. And that is also reflected in Appendix G, column M. This year, the trial courts received an allocation of $86.3 million in new funding for general court operations. We recommend, pursuant to the model, that this be allocated entirely pursuant to WAFM. And that is reflected on column N of Appendix G. Third and finally, WAFM provides that for any new money appropriated for general trial court operations, that there be a reallocation of like amount of historical base funds. Thus, we recommend reallocating $60 million of historical base funds to complement the $60 million in new funding received last year, and $86.3 million of historical base funds to complement the $86.3 million in new funding received this year, for a total reallocation of $146.3 million of historical base funding pursuant to WAFM.
So instead of taking each of these in seriatim, what I'm asking is, after each recommendation and your explanation, if there's a question, please raise your hand. Otherwise, I ask you to move on to the next one, and we'll take them as a whole unless there turns out to be a reason to take one out of, or two out of order.
I can address recommendation number 4. Funding floor allocation adjustment. You may recall on April 20th of this year, the Council approved our recommendation to establish both an absolute funding floor for those courts whose allocation would fall below what we recognized as a minimum level of necessary funding that is required for a court to serve the public, that was $750,000, and a graduated funding floor for those courts whose funding is slightly larger than the absolute floor, but who also have some workload-driven costs that require slightly higher funding. As reflected in Appendix I, this year, 2 courts are eligible for the absolute funding floor of $750,000, and 7 courts are eligible for graduated funding floors, all totaling $1.2 million. Thus, we recommend allocation of each court's share of the 2014-15 WAFM funding floor adjustment. As a result, these 9 funding floor eligible courts would receive funding floor allocations totaling $1.2 million, and those courts not eligible for a funding floor would be allocated a pro rata share of the cost of the funding floor, and that is reflected in Appendix I, column E.
I would note on regarding recommendation 4 that there would be a minor adjustment to the values given the action on the 22.7. So we would ask that as considered as part of the motion and recommendation 4, that that be technically updated to be consistent with the actions on recommendation number 1. With respect to recommendation, unless there are no questions, Recommendation number 5 is related to a specific budget bill language that requires $325,000 of trial court trust fund resources be distributed to the California State Auditor to complete their work regarding implementation of the Judicial Branch Contracting Manual. We bring this to you for action. Next is recommendation number 6, which pertains to the calculation of the 2% reserve. We've already discussed that methodology. This continues that methodology in calculating and gathering the $37.9 million related to the 2%. Recommendations 7, 8, and 9 are related in so much as they relate to the 1% fund balance cap. This is the first year in which this statute will now have an impact on trial court allocations. The statute requires that a preliminary allocation be made by the council reflecting any excesses above the 1%, and that trial court allocations be adjusted commensurate with any overages relative to the 1%, and then those final figures be made and no later than the January meeting. Based on the most, based on the submissions from the 58 trial courts, there's a $2 million that is above the 1%. That is still subject to finalization. We have a court not completing and closing their books until early September, so the figures can change. We know will change because we've been told that there will be some revisions. But as of this July meeting, we are at $2 million. So in theory, that is then retained in the trial court trust fund and could, if sought by the council, to help address the $22.7 million problem. But again, it's preliminary, and so we'd have a bit of caution about assuming that that is absolutely money in the fund. Recommendation number 8 relates to the process by which we would evaluate their 1% cap. We feel it's important that in terms of transparency for this branch, that we review the amounts that are identified as encumbered. If you recall, we developed encumbrance guidelines to help trial courts manage their year-end funds similar to state agencies. There are issues with statutorily restricted funds that could be excluded from the calculation. So we're recommending that a 5-person committee that includes the chair and vice chair of the Court Executive Advisory Committee, 2 members of the Budget Advisory Committee, and myself as being the folks who would look at those and ask questions of each court in terms of their the appropriateness of any of their encumbrances. And then that would be then for this year, but then going forward, have an annual process for doing a preliminary and final computation of year-end fund balances on an ongoing basis for the 14-15 fiscal year and 16 and ongoing. So those are related all to the 1%. And those conclude the recommendations for this report.
So before council, then, are items recommendations 3 through 9. Thank you. Any discussion on items 3 through 9? Judge Stout.
Regarding recommendation number 9, obviously on the 1% computation, the preliminary computation, we want to get that as accurate as possible. Right. With accruals, is July 15th a reasonable date? I need to be educated. I'm wondering if maybe a few days later might help courts be a little more accurate.
Well, in order to provide you the materials and the open meeting requirements, we have to have certain timelines met. And so while it is, they are preliminary, and we're hoping that a lot of the material and information is already contained in Phoenix in the financial systems that we have a lot of it there. The first year is probably the most difficult, but given that we have to have this meeting and the timelines that are required, that was the best that we could do in terms of complying and compiling the information. And we only received one, I think, a couple of days ago, so there were some late folks, but we're doing the best we can.
Thank you.
Judge Morrison. Jacobson.
I'd move approval of items recommendations 3 through 9.
Second.
Thank you. Second by Judge Walsh. Yes. Judge John.
Once again, just a technical matter, Chief. I noted that because of the action the council took with respect to item 1, that I believe Zlotko indicated that to conform, recommendation four should be, the motion with respect to recommendation four should be amended such that it be noted that there be a technical adjustment to delete the 22.7 in the computations referenced in that recommendation, if I understood that correctly.
Right, it would be very small, but rolling it through the entire system, there would be some small changes to what is presented with respect to recommendation four.
I just make that as an observation. Obviously, it's the council's pleasure.
Right. So, Judge Jacobson, you accept that friendly amendment?
I do.
And same, Judge Walsh?
Yes.
Thank you. See no hands up for further discussion. All in favor of motion of recommending recommendations 3 through 9, number 4 is amended, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion to carry. I want to say to the Budget Advisory Committee, I know you're a relatively new committee, but you've been saddled with some of the most difficult issues and new issues and emerging issues. And I know all of us thank you greatly for your attention to detail and work. Thank you. We're going to stand in recess for 30 minutes, and we'll be back at 1:20, please. Thank you.